Second most dangerous advice is probably out there is loving family and friends. You've got these loving family and friends. He says, "Well, I'm thinking about doing this real estate deal, or I'm thinking about doing this private equity. So, you know what? My parents have always given me good advice, or my brother has always given me good advice, and he's a smart guy." You go to them.
What's better than earning money from a 9-to-5 job? It's earning money while you sleep, which is made possible if you start investing. You're listening to the Real Estate Investing Demystified with your very own dynamic duo, Ava Benesaki and August Binias. Tune in as we discuss everything real estate, both on the passive and active sides. We feature life-changing stories of today's real estate leaders that will help build your own roadmap to success. This is a show that will lead you to a diversified portfolio, a much bigger revenue, and a next level venture that brings you a smooth cash flow. Let's get this episode started. Hi, everyone. My name is Ava Benesaki. I'm the CEO of CPI Capital. We're a real estate private equity firm that partners with Canadian investors to acquire U.S. real estate. Now, we've launched a vehicle that allows Canadian investors from all across Canada to utilize their registered funds, such as RSP, TFSA, RESP, et cetera, to self-direct them into our real estate offerings and allows them to really diversify their financial portfolio. So we've had great success since our launch, and about, I'd say, half the equity that we raise for our offerings actually comes from registered funds now. So today I'm interviewing Christian Dye. He's a financial advisor, and unlike most other financial advisors, he actually recommends alternatives such as real estate to his clients. Most financial advisors are focused on the classic stock and bonds portfolio, also known as fixed income or equities portfolio. And just taking a phrase from what Christian has taught me in the times that we've spent together, I've really learned a lot from him. But financial advisors offering this, you know, classic 60-40 stocks and bonds will keep you from being poor, but investing in real estate and alternatives in conjunction with stocks and bonds will make you wealthy. So now let's get into the conversation and see how this is possible and what Christian's thesis is on this matter. Let's get into things. Christian, thank you so much for being with me today.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. And, you know, you and I have co-hosted different events as well, which is how we met. I'm glad to be here because I think I've always been a big studier. My first career was in education. I've always liked to look at the facts. And when my financial practice, which is, you know, helping to advise clients to grow their wealth, specifically in real estate, even though I'm not a realtor, I realized that it was the way that the average Canadian can essentially get to the next level of investing. You don't, in many ways, you actually don't even need a financial advisor if your only strategy is to dollar cost average in the stock market. The advisor will add a little bit of extra layer of value, but probably not as much as you think. But when we think about, well, what are these other alternative classes? Should I be investing in real estate or private equity? That's where a really strong advisor could come in to actually give you the information that you need in order to make a decision.
Absolutely. Yeah, Christian's one of the reasons I was really excited to have you on is that you have a perspective that I think is somewhat unique in the financial advisory world. And you don't just look at real estate and alternative investments as being in competition with a traditional portfolio, but you look at them as potentially playing a different role with an overall wealth strategy. So let's dive right into things. Let's get started. So Christian, as a financial advisor, an author, and an educator, what does your experience and research say about how the ultra wealthy invest versus the average person?
Sure. Great question. So I've authored a couple of books and ebooks, and I really like studying what other people do, and who better to study than essentially the ultra high net worth and also very, very large institutions. Now, what is the difference between an average investor and the ultra high net worth? Well, one, they have teams behind them. They could actually afford these family office teams. So they have people where their entire job is to help to make them money. And they're their only client. So it's like having just one client and it's saying, your only job is to analyze, to look at different asset classes and help me to do two things, grow my wealth, but also, of course, protect it from taxation. So the Tiger 21 is a group that not a lot of people are familiar with, and people listening, feel free to Google them. So the Tiger 21 is probably the wealthiest investors on the planet, and they are part of a club. And in this group where they have chapters across North America, there's a certain amount of money you have to have just to be part of the group. And I think it's roughly around 10 million. But the average investor has about, I think, $110, $120 million. So they have quite a bit of money. What they're probably not going to do is take that amount of money and put it in a stock bond portfolio. That's kind of a, they're beyond that level. So when I studied the Tiger 21, I realized that actually less than 40% of their assets are actually in the public stock market. Whereas the typical investor has 60, 70, 80%, some even 100% in the S&P 500. So you'd have to wonder, well, why is the smartest people on the planet not doing that? Don't they want to make money? But then when we look at it, less than 40% is in there. And then they have almost 30% in real estate. And then they have probably 20 to 30% in private equity. So now they've chopped up these three different asset classes. And the fourth asset class, we'll call it other. Precious metals, you know, insurance-based products, GICs, bonds. So their core is actually those three asset classes. And at Latitude West, that's actually our core as well. We're heavily, heavily real estate focused. Now, the next kind of wealthiest investors out there are actually pension funds. So pension funds are responsible for an enormous amount of money. We're talking in the billions. They cannot take a chance on a fluctuation of a down market, but at the same respect, they have to have very, very high returns. So one pension plan fund in particular is the Canada Pension Plan, which everyone here in Canada contributes to, CPP. People don't know that it's one of the best pension plans in the world. They consistently beat out the S&P 500, but at the same time, they have much less volatility. And if you took a look at their portfolio, not only is about 20 to 30% in private equity, but last year, it was their largest performer, private equity, in terms of rate of return. So I thought with my practice, as well as what I'm advising for clients, why don't I just mimic what the ultra high net worth are doing and figure out the best ways for my practice in order to do it, which is why the majority of our clients, we do fee for service, but majority of our clients actually do not have as much stock exposure as many of the average investor does.
I'm listening to you talk about Tiger 21 and the Canada Pension Plan and just seeing what these ultra wealthy or institutional groups do. What you're really describing is diversification across different types of assets, different return drivers, and potentially different economic environments, and not simply diversification within the stock market. And I think that's where investors sometimes get confused, is they hear the word diversification, even with their financial advisor, they hear the word diversification and think, okay, I own stocks, I own bonds, I own ETFs, so I'm completely diversified, right? And what you're saying is diversification goes much more beyond that. And you can intentionally build wealth. And I think that's really great to outline, because historically, these alternative investments were not like private equity. They're really only accessible to institutions and very wealthy families. And I think the question really becomes, as an investor, access improves, should everyday investors be at least educating themselves on what else is out there, right? So
yeah,
absolutely. So I think let's get to the next question that I have for you, Christian, is why should Canadian real estate investors broaden their portfolio, which might include US real estate?
Yeah. And I know there is a little bit of sentiment because of what's going politically with the US, but at the end of the day, that too shall pass. And it's actually kind of silly if somebody said, I want to grow my wealth, but I refuse to do anything that has to do with the S&P 500 or with the US or anything of that sort. It's more or less just saying, don't grow my money as well as it possibly could be. Every single thing we touch, of course, has to deal with that market. I myself have invested inside the US real estate. I've owned a property there for many, many, many years. The private equity funds that my clients are involved with, the public equity funds my clients are involved with, there's just too much overlap. But why the US in general for real estate? And of course, you've probably talked about this more in some of your other workshops and webinars. It's a bigger playing ground. You could cherry pick states that are very tax friendly to investors. You could cherry pick states that are very friendly to landlords as opposed to tenants. And you could also cherry pick states that have heavily corrected in their real estate markets, but also have high foundational growth potential. So isn't that exactly what an investor is supposed to be doing? If we just limited that to our own geography, or if we just limited that to, let's say, the TSX, then we're leaving a lot of money on the table. So a true diversification is actually in looking at different geographies and different asset classes. So as I said, I am a bit of an academic. People want to just look up private equity on their own and said, is this something worth investing in? You're correct. 10 years ago, you probably would have needed $1 million to $5 million to be involved in any of these private equity firms right now. It's just because it is a little bit of a different asset class. It has a little bit of a bigger hurdle. But it's just recently that now institutions as well as individual investors have more access to private equity. So if anyone wanted to look up Cambridge Associates study in 2023, they did a 25-year period study where they compared essentially the stock market in the form of the Russell 3000 compared to the private equity market just as a whole. And what they found was in this 25-year study, the average rate of return on the Russell was about 8.16. And anyone investing in the stock market, would probably agree with that. 25 years, 8%. But the private equity in that same time frame was 13.3%. So that's a 5% difference. We're talking, almost at least a third more. And the difference is staggering when you think about it. So right away, the private equity, when I talk to my clients about private equity, it's not there to beat the stock market, even though historically it has. It's actually just there to non-correlate against the stock market. It's just a different asset class. We all know the S&P 500 has been rip-roaring high for the last, well, for sure, the last 5 years in double-digit returns. But we know if we stretch that out longer, it's not going to always be that way. And in the studies that I've shown from 2010 to 2026 today, that's 16 years, the S&P 500 has returned 13%, which is fantastic. That's an incredible run. But that's a 16-year time frame. If I go from 2000 to 2026, that's 26 years. 2000 to 2026, that exact same stock market, the S&P 500, has only returned 7.9. If you strip out inflation, that's only 5.2. So one of the things that we have to realize is the facts. And those are the facts. It's not hard to research that data. But at the same time, a lot of people don't fully understand private equity, and they don't understand why the diversification into other geographies makes a lot more sense if you truly want to have a balanced portfolio.
Yeah, very good points. I think it's especially relevant for Canadians because we're talking about diversification, obviously, not just over asset classes, but geographically as well. You could be a Canadian investor who owns Canadian stocks, Canadian bonds, Canadian real estate, and has the majority of your financial life tied to the Canadian economy. And you could technically have a diversified portfolio, but you're still heavily concentrated in one country. And that's really the point Christian's trying to make here. We're not saying that Canadians should abandon Canada. We're just saying that a world of investment opportunities outside of Canada and the United States is obviously one of the most largest and most developed real estate markets in the world. So, yeah, I think that's great that we speak about diversification. I always when I'm talking with investors, Christian, I always talk about a different diversification as well. By investing in the US, you now have another layer of diversification when it comes to different currencies that you own, because you're also introducing a US currency to your portfolio as well. So now we're talking about, asset class diversification, geographic diversification, and currency diversification, which opens up a new world for investors and they get excited about that. So very good points. All right, now moving on to my next question, Christian. What do you say to someone who has only invested in a balanced stock and bond portfolio?
Yeah, and that basically is about 90% of all investors out there. Because you're institutional investors. So if somebody, I think I'm really talking about a non-professional. I'm talking about the average person who's just has a job, their spouse has a job, and they might be middle upper or upper income. They will typically go to a financial advisor or a bank who's got an advisor, or sometimes they try to do it themselves. And oftentimes, a lot of literature is some form of a balanced portfolio in the form of 60% stocks, 40% bonds, or 70-30, or 80-20, depending on their age and depending on their risk profile. So there's a lot of software out there where you kind of get this bank advisor who has very little experience. They type in, and the software says you need 75% stocks and 25% bonds. And this is the portfolio that that bank has in the form of mutual funds, right? But it's a very narrow focus. That's kind of like imagine driving down a highway and you're just staying in one lane. It's just literally one lane. And that's the lane you're in. You're in the balanced stock portfolio mutual funds lane. And the person advising you can only see what's inside that lane. But the ultra high net worth and professional investors, they just don't do that. They're not going to stay in that one lane. It's insane. You've got the real estate lane. Real estate, you have leverage. You have the 5-to-1 rule. For every 1% that the real estate goes up, then you get a 5% return because of the leverage. There's the private equity lane. There's the natural resources lane. Like if you invested in gold and silver, you would have done very, very well over the last 10 years. But I think the mutual funds will try to package that and said, oh, we have exposure to that, but it's in still inside the mutual fund. So what I find is that that balanced portfolio actually isn't that balanced. And the reason why I say that is this. When we have market crashes, usually, or large pullbacks, then when you go to the advisor, they says, well, what are we doing over here? And it's like, well, all of my portfolio has pulled back. Now we have to wait for it to come back and don't stop investing, dollar cost average. And kind of what I've said in my book, Break Your Wealth Ceiling, that strategy will prevent you from being poor, will not cause you to be rich. And so the advisor's not doing a bad job. Most of my colleagues are these fantastic advisors who basically advise on that. They balance stock portfolios. I'm the unicorn. I'm the anomaly where I do the fee for service and I heavily promote real estate assets, real estate growth, private equity. But what happens is that I'm going to throw a number out there. Between now and 2030, we'll probably have a significant pullback in the S&P 500. And the reason is because tech makes up a huge portion of that, probably about a third, and tech is overvalued by about 40%. Right away, I don't like those numbers, right? I definitely don't like those numbers. They talk about the 12-hour clock of investing. Real estate's got a 12-hour clock, and the stock market's got a 12-hour clock. 12 o'clock is the peak. That's the absolute peak of the market. 6 o'clock is the absolute bottom. All this data shows that from the stock market perspective, we're at around 11 o'clock, maybe 12, like we're at its peak. They said in real estate right now in our cycle, our peak was 2022. So right now on the cycle, we're probably at about 4 or 5 o'clock. You know, where do you want to buy and where do you want to sell inside if you think of this 12-hour clock? And if people said, I want to sell high and buy low, people often do the opposite. You know, they usually buy high and they sell low. But again, a true balanced portfolio really should have more than just mutual funds and in sort of a stock bond portfolio. The professionals are all doing private equity. The professionals are all doing real estate. Then why aren't you looking into it? I'm not saying to do it. I'm saying just look into it to see if it makes sense.
I really like that answer because I don't think the takeaway here is that stocks and bonds are bad. It's that they don't necessarily have to be the entire conversation. That's a very important distinction because I don't want someone listening to this thinking that we're saying sell your stocks and bonds, put everything into real estate. As Christian mentioned, the diversification. And it's really about asking whether your portfolio is appropriately diversified for you, your goals, your horizon, and obviously the tolerance of risk that you have. So very, very good points on that. I think that gives us a really good framework, Christian. We've talked about what wealthy investors tend to do. We've talked about diversification, why alternatives maybe have a role in a portfolio. But now I want to turn the conversation around and talk about something I think a lot of our listeners have probably experienced themselves. And that is the relationship between financial advice and alternative investments like real estate. So, Christian, let me ask you, why might a traditional financial advisor not recommend clients to invest in real estate?
Oh, well, I don't think the session is long enough just because it's a pretty loaded question over there, but I'll try to answer the best of my ability. So I am a financial advisor, but I've been a real estate investor since I was in my 20s. And it was my uncle who kind of mentored me. He was an engineer, but all of his wealth, he had so much wealth, but he was an engineer. He didn't make that much money, but he made it in real estate. And he also made it in alternative investments. It wasn't all in the stock market. And he said the stock market had done okay from him. But then when he tried to do some do it yourself investing in the stock market, he says, oh, that's where he really lost money. But he says in real estate, he never lost money. I said, your real estate has never gone down. He says, oh, no, it's gone down plenty of times, but I've never lost money. And then I said, can you explain that a little bit more to me? And then in my early 20s, I started to invest in real estate. And that's why I also invest also in the US and outside of my own province. But if you think about it, if I'm again, going back to the lane analogy, if I am I'll use a bank advisor, and there's a lot of great bank advisors out there. But if I'm a bank advisor and I've had a relationship with you for 10 years and you come to me and you says, oh, there's this group called CPI Capital, and I have friends who invest with them. And I saw their presentation. They get really good rates of return and they invest in real estate. I'm thinking of taking 10% of my portfolio and I'm thinking of investing them with CPI. What do you think about that? Well, I'll tell you now, the financial advisor is in a lose-lose position because one of two things is going to happen. They're going to say, okay, take 10% of your portfolio and invest it with them, and the deal goes bad. The deal goes bad. They didn't make the money. And they says, oh man, I made this huge mistake. You're my financial advisor. You probably should have protected me a little bit more. So right away, he looks bad. Or the deal goes great. Double digit returns, great cash flow, dividends, everything looks fantastic. Again, the advisor is, he'll probably go back to the advisor, says, that thing went so well. My balanced stock portfolio got me 8%. This portfolio got me 13%. I'm going to strip out another 30% and do more of that. Again, it's a lose for the advisor. So why on earth would they be incentivized, especially if they work for an institution that wants to keep as much assets under management? Why on earth would they say, yes, this is a good idea? Or why on earth would they say, let me investigate this to give you a more educated opinion? I think most of them will say, nope, those rates of return are too high. It's a scam. Or nope, it's not going to work. Or here's a list of all the things that could go wrong, which is why you shouldn't do it. That list is valid. But did they investigate it? Did they look into it? Did they look at the track record? Did they do a little bit of deeper research? And with our financial practice, we do invest in real estate, where clients will come to us and say, hey, I'm thinking of buying this multi-unit building. Is this a good idea? We're not going to say no. We're going to say, this is why we're a fee for service. Let's investigate that. Here's a private equity that I'm really interested. Do you think I should invest in it? Let's figure this out. So what we do is we have this rule. We inquire, we research, and then we verify. Once we have that information, then we advise our clients because we are financial advisors. We're not stock and mutual fund advisors, which I think the majority of people who say that they're financial advisors, they're actually just stock and mutual fund advisors, maybe insurance advisors as well. So I kind of feel that to answer your question, why don't they recommend real estate? What's in it for them? Nothing. The greatest version of that is maybe a REIT inside their mutual fund portfolio. But aside from that, there's not really a lot of benefit in them encouraging you to strip out assets under management to put with your firm. So that's the good and the ugly.
Yes, very good answer. And I think that that's a really important distinction because I think the answer is it's not necessarily that financial advisors don't care about their clients. There are just structural reasons why certain investments are more commonly recommended to others. And to your point, if your entire business model is based, your business model, your licensing structure, your compensation structure, and investment platform are built around public securities, then naturally, that's going to be the type of influence of solutions that they present to their clients. But one thing that investors should think about, and they don't always think about, is incentives, right? Well, that's one of the most important things I think an investor can understand. And that's just to your point. You don't necessarily have to assume that someone is giving you bad advice simply because they are recommending something else that they get paid for and they don't understand real estate. But you should understand, like, people should understand how they're compensated and whether there are other options that they're able to recommend outside of what they're showing on paper in front of you as well.
Yeah, I think there's that saying that I'm sure many people have probably heard of, and that's If your only tool is a hammer, then everything becomes a nail.
Nice.
So if I said, oh, I want to grow my wealth, and I go to somebody, traditional advisor who I used to have, when I was back in my teaching days, he said, oh, RSPs, that's the best way to save up for retirement. You mean buying a rental property is not a good retirement vehicle? No, RSPs, RSPs, RSPs. If I took that advice 25 years ago, I would be half the man. I like literally my wealth would be chopped by two-thirds. All of my wealth is in real estate. So if I stuck, and I practice what I do, if I stuck with a balanced portfolio off of a teacher's income back 25 years ago, right now I would not be living in the house that I'm in. I would not be taking the vacations that I take. I would not be driving the car that I drive. My kids would not li be living the lifestyle that I do if I stuck with a balanced mutual fund portfolio for the last 25 years. So
Right.
your opinion might be different than mine, but your experience is not different than mine. My experience has been I've grown all of my wealth through real estate, which is why I've written books about it, which is why I encourage my clients to diversify into real estate, to diversify into private equity. And my only tool is not a hammer, and neither should yours be.
Amazing points, Christian. Absolutely love it. Let's get to our next question. The best-selling book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, teaches people the wealth you build through real estate. So why aren't advisors helping clients do that?
Yeah, this is the classic. This is kind of the epitome of the first financial book that decided to talk really about real estate, cash flowing assets, leverage, about getting out of the rat race. And I think Robert Kiyosaki has done a lot for the community in helping people to understand, I guess, what he's kind of calls the game that's being played over here. Full disclaimer, he is not a big mutual funds guy, okay? It doesn't mean mutual funds are bad, but he is not a big mutual funds guy. He is also not a fan of traditional financial advisors. He actually calls them crooks. Now, I definitely do not call them crooks, but I understand his point of view because he had those experiences. He had those experiences where he actually built wealth from nothing in real estate. And then when his wealth hit a certain amount, him and his wife, Kim, would talk to various different financial advisors who are these higher level professionals who can help him with taxation, help him continue to preserve and grow his money. And they told him similar things. Sell your real estate, put it in mutual funds. And he's like, he basically walked up and got out the door. So he started to realize that there is a biasness out there. And he also realized that he created his wealth in real estate assets, in joint ventures, in private equity, in brick and mortar real estate. I tended to agree because my history looked like that as well. Why aren't advisors really doing that? The quick answer is I'm not sure because I'm not them. I know what I've seen and I know the comments that my other clients have brought me. They usually come to me, they says, I've hit a point where my advisor, who I really, really like and I really trust, but they just can't help me any further. And I get it. They don't want to give up the relationship, but at the same time, they can't take them to the next level. And I think that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, really describes how the game is played among the wealthy and how the average person can get to that level. And again, I talk about the first book I wrote, Break Your Wealth Ceiling. I talk about I call one chapter, I call it Three Wise Men. And the three wise men were three men that I work with, and they were all high school teachers. And all of them had a few things in common. Number one, they all retired early. Number two, they all retired with a lot more money than they needed, and definitely more money than their peers had who were also teachers. And then the third attribute that they all had is they all invested in real estate, off of a teacher's income. It's the only real way that the average person can get to the next level from what I found. And Andrew Carnegie, who's a lot of people may have heard the name, but they don't really know the history, he was actually the richest man on the planet at one time. And if you adjust for inflation, he was basically up there with Elon Musk as a comparison. But he built his money in the steel industry and he built great amounts of wealth. And then he spent the second half of his life giving all of that wealth away for charitable reasons. But when they interviewed him, they says, okay, a young person who's ambitious and they want to grow wealth, what is the best way to grow wealth? He didn't say build a steel empire because he knew the majority of people couldn't do that. He basically had one message, and it wasn't a diversified portfolio. It wasn't even invest in stocks. He says, buy real estate. That is the fastest shortcut to wealth for the average person. And the thing is, that's basically my message as well. And I'm not saying sell the farm and put everything on assets in real estate. My clients do have assets in the public stock market. They do have assets in private equity, but we have to make room for real estate. We have to make room for all of those other things. CPI Capital is helping people to do that. But if they don't want the brick and mortar, if they don't want to jump into markets like in the US, they don't want to deal with tenants and things of that sort, the concepts are still the same. You've got leverage, you've got diversification, you've got an asset class that is not directly correlated to the stock market. It's an asset class that could help you to smoothen out your wealth, but at the same time to grow it without giving up gains. Because right now, what is the tool for a balanced portfolio to smoothen out the volatility? Bonds and or GICs. They're not yielding very much. And if it's inside of a corporation, they're taxed the heaviest. So oftentimes they don't even keep up with inflation. So why don't I just find another asset class that is not correlated to the stock market, where I don't have to give up gains, but at the same time, it has the potential to grow and in many times grows further than the stock market.
I'm absolutely loving this conversation with you, Christian, because it just, just like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, people call it the Purple Bible. I would say, I've talked to over 1,000 accredited investors, and I cannot tell you how many people told me that they read that book and it's changed their lives. So doing an interview like this with yourself, just opening up the mindset and the perspective that investors have, it's life-changing. So yeah, I'm excited to share this. So moving on, Christian, what should listeners look for in an unbiased financial advice, and what questions should they ask?
That's great. And again, I'm going to circle back to the traditional financial advisor because I'm assuming that a lot of your listeners right now, accredited, non-accredited, they probably have been using a financial advisor. If that relationship is going great, then you probably, in many ways, shouldn't interrupt the parts of it that are going great. And if the parts of it that are going great is, yeah, they're managing my RRSPs and they're doing a really, really good job, then sure, don't interrupt it. But if you're sort of saying, well, maybe I should be diversifying, maybe I should be doing other things with it, by all means, it's just like a good doctor, but you want a better doctor. Go looking around. Or you might say, I want to keep this advisor, but I do need some extra help over here because I seem to be hitting a roadblock whenever I bring the word real estate or alternative assets or private equity. There seems to be this hard line where they don't help me. And in some cases, they don't even encourage it. So when you're looking to diversify your advice, you want to pre-qualify what are your goals. And if your goal is, I want to grow in real estate and I have an advisor who's not growing in real estate, then double check to see if that's still a good fit. Maybe it was a good fit at the first stage of life. And the same thing with me. My wife and I used this financial advisor when we were both young teachers in our 20s. We didn't really know what we were doing. We met a guy, great guy. We referred him to many people, and many of our other friends are still using him. But we hit a point where I felt we had outgrown him. I started investing in real estate on my own. I started looking at private equity on my own, and there was no help coming from that area. So we basically outgrew him, which is okay. Sometimes a relationship does outgrow. But if you're going to look for another advisor or an additional advisor, make sure you guys are aligned. Ask the hard questions. I'm thinking of investing in real estate. Sure, I could help you. How can you help me? How exactly can you help me to grow my wealth in real estate? I'm thinking of investing in private equity. Oh, okay, I could help you. Exactly how can you help me? If I come across private equity, can I show it to you? Can you analyze it and can you help advise on it? Or is the only private equity you could help me is the ones that you and your firm are providing? So, and this is me biased, the absolute best piece of advice is fee for service. At the end of the day, a fee for service advisor will have no real hidden agenda. You get what you pay for over here. And if the person that you are working with is only compensated with assets under management or insurance products, guess what? The only thing they're going to offer you is mutual funds and insurance products. That's it. Are they going to help you to expand into multi-unit buildings in the US? No. Are they going to help you to expand into multi-unit buildings through private equity in the US? Probably not. And I think that's how wealth is really, really obtained. So dangerous advice is the friendly financial advisor that you've been with too long, but they might be keeping you underneath what I like to call your wealth ceiling. they might more or less be keeping you in the middle, right? And most of us are trying to move to the next level, wherever our level happens to be. Second most dangerous advice is probably out there is loving family and friends. You know, you've got these loving family and friends. He says, well, I'm thinking about doing this real estate deal, or I'm thinking about doing this private equity. So, you know what? My parents have always given me good advice, or my brother has always given me good advice, and he's a smart guy. You go to them, but they actually don't know what they're talking about. You ask somebody a question, they're going to give you an answer. And if it comes from a loving voice, the most dangerous thing is that it's the wrong advice. That's the problem. It's the wrong advice. And we have so many regrets when it comes to investments. But one of the biggest regrets is that we got the wrong advice, we followed it. And of course, in hindsight, we looked at it and we said, I totally should have did that. Not a lot of people that I know, this is just my experience, not a lot of people that I know invested in real estate 15, 20 years ago and then said, oh my God, what a big mistake. I totally shouldn't have invested in that real estate. No, I've heard the opposite. I usually push clients to invest in more in real estate, but let's be careful of the real estate we invest in. Let's make sure it's in the right area, the right product, or if it's the right private equity. Those are the things we should be researching. But really, you know, it's an asset class with much lower volatility than the stock market, with historically higher gains if you consider the leverage that comes with it. So ask the right questions. And here's an even more poignant question. And I'm waiting for this question when people ask me, Christian, you're somebody who helps to grow wealth in real estate. Tell me how. And then I tell them how. I help to find deals. I help to structure their deals. I help to analyze what they should keep, what they should sell. But then the bigger question is, do you invest in real estate? And then I say, of course I do. And I've been doing this for decades over here. And some examples of things that I've done. Do you invest out of province? Do you invest in the US? And if the answer is yes, then you're actually aligned with someone. If somebody promises you, I can help you grow your wealth in real estate, I can help you grow your wealth in private equity, I can help you to do all of these other things to grow your wealth beyond just a traditional portfolio, but then you find out that they own no real estate. If they own no private equity themselves, how on earth are they going to research you in helping you with private equity if they don't know that yourself? You're better off getting someone who says, oh no, I'm very, very familiar with private equity. I know how to analyze these firms. And if CPI is good, I will let you know. And if they're bad, I will also let you know. That's the guy you want to work with. You don't want to work with a person who overpromises, but they have no experience in it themselves. And you definitely don't want to work with a person where you're not aligned. And if you're saying, I want to grow my wealth outside of the stock market in real estate and private equity, but I'm working with an advisor who does not do that with his clients now and does not do that himself, you're already misaligned.
I think sometimes investors outsource too much of the thinking to the person managing their money, and you have really opened up a new doorway. Some of those questions that you were saying are great questions. I honestly think every investor should write those down before meeting with their financial advisor next time. And it's not that you're trying to challenge your advisor, you're just really trying to open up a whole new world, of how you want to build wealth, after you have a conversation with your spouse, or you look at yourself in the mirror and say, oh my gosh, there's other strategies out there that I'm missing out on that are accessible to me. That is some incredible points, Christian. I always just enjoy our conversations so much. I think the biggest takeaway for me for this conversation is that the conversation shouldn't really be stocks versus real estate. It should be about understanding the different roles that different classes can play in building and preserving wealth. Another one of the takeaways, Christian, is that investors need to become more educated consumers of financial advice. And that's really one of the big takeaways. You don't have to distrust your advisor, but you should understand the advice you're receiving, the incentives behind it, and whether you're actually getting the full pictures for the opportunities that are available to you.
Can you see my screen okay?
I can, yeah, absolutely.
I just wanted to let you, when you said that they should get more educated, if you haven't read Rich Dad Poor Dad, you should. Another less well-known book, which is the one that I wrote a few years ago, was Break Your Wealth Ceiling. And when we're talking about real estate, which is what we're doing right now, it shares a lot of the math behind how ordinary people can create extraordinary wealth with real estate. It also talks a lot about a lot of the data. A nice chunk of data is private equity. And private equity, where Tony Robbins, another book people should consider reading, is The Holy Grail of Investing, where he specifically does his own research, Tony Robbins, comparing private equity to public equity. And he did a 40-year study showing a 14% return versus a 9.2% return, and what that means in the form of wealth. And I think if people understood how the rich get rich, and Tony Robbins interviews all of these hedge fund managers, he interviews all of the wealthiest investors that he knew, and they all invest in private equity. And he says, but the average person doesn't know that because they don't have access to it, or they don't understand it, or the advisors they're using is not showing it. So, three books. We've got Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We've got Tony Robbins, The Holy Grail of Investing. And we got my book, Break Your Wealth Ceiling. Now, this is available on Amazon and Audible. But if you contact me and my team, we just converted this to ebook, which we'll download for free for you. So, I know we're slowly wrapping up here. So if anyone wanted to chat a little bit more about me and with me and my team, or would like a copy of the ebook, there's a QR code. Just request it from us and we're happy to send it to you. If you wanted to look at our practice, we're a little bit of a unicorn, which is probably why you're interviewing me now. We're a financial practice that is fee for service, but we focus on real estate investors, real estate growth strategies. We like alternative investments such as private equity, even though we still continue to do wealth management with public equities as well. But we highly promote that people build their wealth with real estate. So I'm at www.latitude-west.ca if you'd like to learn a little bit more. And if you want to just reach out to me directly, I love talking to people. CDY@latitude-west.ca.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Christian. I really appreciate you can stop the share now. I was going to say, just wanted to thank you so much for joining me today. And I think you've given our listeners a lot to think about. And I have so much respect for you. So thank you so much for being on our show today.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this episode. We hope this conversation enlightened you on how to win big in this highly profitable and risk-averse space. Get on your feet and embrace this world that offers so many opportunities just waiting for you out there. Continue your journey to becoming a savvy real estate expert by subscribing to the show at cpicapital.ca. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and share with your friends. See you on the next one.